Thank you for standing by, and welcome to Mobile Market in China conference call. At this time, all participants are in the listen-only mode. If you require any operator assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. I must advise you, this conference is being recorded today on Wednesday, 17th of December 2014. I would now like to hand the conference over to our speaker today, Philip Sparks. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Well, hello everyone. This is Philip Sparks from Arm's Investor Relations team, and thank you all for joining this call on the subject of the mobile market in China. With me on the line are James Bruce, Director of Mobile in our segment marketing team, and we have Andrew Dunn, Semiconductor Analyst at RBC Capital Markets, who's going to be asking the questions today. Hopefully you've had a chance to visit our Investor Relations website and watch James's online presentation. If not, you can view it later on at ir.arm.com. This call today is going to be listen only. We won't be taking live Q&A at the end, but if you do have a question for James, then please email it to investor.relations@arm.com and we will try to address your question during the call. So with that, I will hand over to Andrew, who's going to lead this discussion. Over to you, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Phil, and thank you to James also for the chance to discuss Arm's opportunity within the mobile market in China. This obviously is an area that's receiving a lot more attention lately. Much of the future unit growth in smartphones is coming from developing regions such as China, and we've received a lot more incoming questions around this topic. So perhaps with that, we can jump straight into Q&A, and we'll try to incorporate any additional questions that Phil receives in his inbox during the call. So James, perhaps just to start us off, you've given a very good presentation on the web, but perhaps could you give us what you see as the most important drivers of the mobile market for Arm in China? We talked about the middle class, the rise of the middle class, increasing levels of disposable income, but are there other factors, and how much, for example, have the homegrown SoC vendors played a role?
So I think if you look at the China market, there's actually been a number of factors that have driven the growth. And those factors are definitely growth in the middle class, their disposable income, which has very much driven the adoption of $300 plus handsets. But also the other interesting trend has been very much the China smartphone ecosystem, in that it's managed to deliver smartphones at new price points. So what we've seen is this trend of smartphones being delivered in this sub-$150 price point, and now we're seeing smartphones as low as $23. So this combination of our SoC partners in China combined with the supply chain in China has really opened up the smartphone to a completely different consumer base within China just because of the new price points. And I think one of the interesting trends that you're seeing in China and also in other developing markets is that for some consumers, the smartphone is actually their first compute device.
Excellent. We'll come back to that point, I think. But just so that we have some sort of framing here, could you perhaps give us some idea of either number of units or proportion of units that your Chinese customers or partners currently account for, perhaps as a proportion of the whole, and how you might see that evolving over time?
So if you look at overall Asia, including Korea, Taiwan, and China, the number of units is 20%. If you look within China, it's 7%, and that's growing rapidly. And just to be clear on the units, it's not just the application processor. It can be the Bluetooth. It can be the other connectivity, such as the Wi-Fi and the modem.
Excellent. And just a point of clarity, would those percentages be as a proportion of your smartphone shipments or your total Arm shipments?
They would be a total Arm shipments.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And then perhaps moving onto 4G and the rollout of 4G in China, could you perhaps give us some idea about sort of where we are in the process? Is this just starting? Are we the sort of beginning of this? How far along is this come in the process?
So really we're just in the first year of rollout of LTE in China. It's very much at the start. And I think if you look at the typical rollout of a new network technology, especially in a large geography such as China, it's really going to be a 4-year transition. So definitely at the start, and there's going to be a lot more growth in the LTE market in China.
Okay, and you've indicated in public in some areas the sort of the unit shipments that China Mobile and China Unicom are targeting. But how has Arm benefited to date from 4G, and where do you see these opportunities going forward, and perhaps even outside of the mobile device world? Thanks.
So if you look at LTE, it actually provides a number of opportunities for Arm. Typically, when you transition from one baseband technology to the next generation, it actually puts tougher requirements on the CPU that's actually used for the modem. And also what you see is that the requirements on the apps processor increase as well. So fundamentally, when you have one of these transitions from one baseband standard to another, what you see is this sort of push upwards of the ARM technology used in the smartphone. And of course, the other exciting thing about massive deployment such as LTE is obviously the infrastructure opportunities for ARM SoCs as well.
Great. So a lot of a large waterfront there to exploit. Could you just discuss, perhaps, are there any differences in how ARM interacts with its Chinese partners, perhaps in terms of IP they're buying, the time frames they like to operate under? Now, how would you sort of characterize this, if there are any differences?
But I think the major differences between China customers and other customers is a combination of factors. First of all, they have a very fast time to market. And because they have a very short time to market, what we see is that they actually purchase a wider collection of ARM IP. So a typical China customer will be buying our CPU solutions, Mali, our POPs, that's our processor optimization packages, our physical IP solutions. And it's really about time to market. They want to have IP solutions that they know work together and they can deploy very quickly.
Okay. And then perhaps leading on from that, I would imagine that a number of Chinese customers that would take sort of off-the-shelf standard designs, but clearly the Chinese capability has advanced significantly in recent years. Where do you sort of see China in terms of design talent compared to perhaps, say, Taiwan or North America?
So I think if you look from the design talent, we're seeing some very good SoCs coming out of China. And if you're looking at the high end, one example I would highlight is in the slide, I talk about the Huawei Honor 6. And this has a high silicon SoC in that. And that has a combination of big.LITTLE technology with a Cortex-A15, Cortex-A7. Also, it has our Mali graphics, and it also has a Cat6 LTE modem all integrated in the same SoC. So that is very much near the sort of top of the market capabilities. And then I think if you look at the sort of very low-cost smartphones, though it's different technology, I think the China Silicon partners have been very good at actually bringing smartphone technology at new price points. It's perhaps different skills from a traditional SoC partner, but this ability to deliver such a low bill of materials is a very good skill set.
Interesting you mentioned Huawei there. Clearly a very advanced chip. Much of the, a fair amount, I think it's fair to say, of the production has been for local market, and speaking generally about the Chinese SoC vendors, but Do you think that the Chinese semi companies will be successful perhaps selling into Western markets at the higher end, and how might you think about the impact that may have on royalties?
So I think definitely you're going to see more silicon from both China and Taiwanese silicon partners coming into Western markets. And I think from Arm's perspective, it's going to have no impact on the actual royalties, because this is very much about delivering, especially at the high end, the latest and greatest ARM IP and using sort of leading edge ARM IP. And you really will see fundamentally the sort of same technology between, let's say, a Taiwanese supplied SoC and an SoC coming from another partner.
Okay. Can we perhaps turn to Mali now, Mali Graphics? I've done some looking at the SoC vendors in China, and it would appear that the vast majority have adopted Mali, and some of which are exclusively Mali houses. Could you just talk about perhaps what's driven their decisions there and how their requirements might be changing over time?
So, as I mentioned earlier, one thing that our China SIPs have is a very tight time to market, and that's one of the reasons that they've purchased the Mali technology, is that it really helps on getting them into production. I think the other factor is that the Mali solutions are very scalable, all the way from Mali 400s being used in low-cost handsets, all the way up to Mali T600 and T700 series being used in high-end SoCs. And I think what you're seeing is very much that the China customer base for ARM is using the entire Mali portfolio.
And is there any advantage in the fact that it's an ARM Mali and an ARM processor that they're using?
From their perspective, absolutely. It's very much about time to market. In this business, weeks, even months really matter. And being able to just source as much IP from one supplier as possible does bring time to market advantages.
Okay, thank you. And then perhaps moving slightly high level question on handsets generally. We've got the rise of the Chinese supply chain, and we're seeing the result of that in sort of $25 smartphones, which is incredible. So how do you see handset ASPs trending, with that in mind?
So I think if you look from the overall market, if you look at ASPs, yes, the sort of fundamental trend is downwards. But I think the important things to remember is this is not a deflationary effect. This is not the case of high-end smartphones, their ASPs are eroding. This is actually a mix effect. And what you're seeing now in the smartphone market is that the growth of entry-level smartphones, the growth of mid-tier smartphones is driving up the actual volume. And just by the sheer mix factor, because these now present these significant parts of the smartphone market, they are affecting the overall ASP.
Okay. And now, handset ASPs to one side, if we turn now to SoC ASPs, clearly there are price downs there, and there's a mix effect rather than deflationary effect. But how should we think about SoC ASPs trending?
So I think the important thing to emphasize about the actual SoC ASP, they don't actually track the handset ASP directly. And what you could see, for example, is that a $400 smartphone would have a $20 SoC in it, and perhaps a $40 smartphone would have a $4 SoC. So though there's been a 10x difference in the price of the handset, there's only a 5x gap in the actual chip price. And certainly, I think if you look at the actual ASPs within a particular price band, what you see is that they're staying roughly the same. But also what you're seeing is the use of the ARM technology in SoCs, especially in the mid-tier, and in the entry level is actually increasing. So what you're seeing now is this trend for example, in Big.Little, as I mentioned on the $300 handset from Huawei. And also you're seeing this other major trend of the rise of octa-core. This is where you have a configuration of four fast Cortex-A7s or Cortex-A53s and four slower Cortex-A7s or Cortex-A53s, implementing a sort of Big.Little type system, and you're really starting to see this enter into this sort of $150 smartphone.
Okay, so just to clarify for my sort of peace of mind, if you like, so you're seeing flat ASPs within each segment of the smartphone market, and that's as a result of increasing complexity of technology within each segment, and that would counteract the impact of a standard, you know, semi ASP downs of year, sort of, you know, 15%-ish. Would that be fair?
I think that would generally be a fair statement. I mean, just to be absolutely clear, I mean, you're obviously going to have some ASP fluctuation depending upon the particular SoCs and the type of SoCs. But generally what you're seeing is very much this trend of delivering more within an SoC at, say, a particular price point.
And of course, once you're delivering more on technology, in theory, you would achieve a higher royalty rate than a more simple technology or previous generation.
Exactly. And also the other important thing to emphasize is where you do see the low, really low ASP parts, they're very much going into new markets and creating new opportunities for Arm.
Okay, thank you. While we're talking about royalties, just could you perhaps give us a reminder of the process of collecting royalties, how these are audited, and perhaps have you ever had any issues around auditing of royalties in China?
So really, I'm going to let Phil answer this question. So Phil, could you provide some insight on this?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I mean, there's no difference to the way that we audit our partners in China to anywhere else. So the terms of our license agreements mean that partners have to agree to being audited by typically one of the big four accountants every few years or so. And those accountants will go in and check that the numbers they've reported to Arm match the sales as they've been recording their sales ledgers. And very rarely actually do they uncover a major error. And if there is an error, then it's always been down to an oversight rather than deliberate under-reporting. And the reason being is if we found out that anyone was deliberately under-reporting their shipments, it's highly unlikely that we would give them access to next-generation technology. So our partners are very, very keen to make sure that their reporting to us is as accurate as their internal systems will allow.
Okay, so no difference in China from anywhere else?
Absolutely not.
Just turning to competition now, because China is clearly a very attractive market, and this hasn't gone unnoticed by your competitors. And they're clearly keen to capture this opportunity too. So how does Arm and Arm's ecosystem defend its leadership position in China?
So I think if you actually look at this market, especially where you've seen people announce that they're going to go after the low-cost smartphone market, I think the critical things to emphasize about the strength of the Arm ecosystem is, first of all, the actual strength of the app ecosystem in China built around Arm. What you see is that over 90% of the applications that are being written using the Android native development kit have been designed for Arm. So there's that software ecosystem. The second part is when you're looking at these low-cost handsets, these sub-$100 handsets, it's very much about ensuring that you maintain the margins. And the great advantage is at this price point, you really see Cortex-A7, Cortex-A53 being used. And if you look at other solutions, they are actually significantly larger than the Cortex-A7 or the Cortex-A53. And what this means is that anyone who's coming in with one of these larger CPU designs would be at a significant margin, or would be significantly challenged on the margins, just because those CPUs are so large relative to the Cortex-A7 and the Cortex-A53.
Okay, and just you sort of touched on the ecosystem there, and you mentioned it in the slide deck, and you sort of highlight how fragmented the ecosystem is in China. Just could you perhaps give us some clues as to how that's a benefit or a hindrance to Arm, and perhaps what's Arm doing to help you develop the ecosystem in China?
So I think rather than the term fragmented, I would actually use the term diverse, and that's just by the sheer size of the market. And certainly from Arm's perspective, this diverse market matches very well to the Arm business model. We have a very diverse range of SoCs, also a diverse range of handsets. And I think it's actually very tough for someone else to come into such diverse markets, because they've got to reach out to all these various companies, get the optimizations done, and that's a lot of work. Certainly from Arm's perspective, we do work with a range of companies on doing software optimizations to make sure that they take full advantage of the Arm CPUs or the Arm Mali GPUs.
Okay, thank you. Lastly, and we've had a few questions as the call has been ongoing on 64-bit. 64-bit obviously arrived in mobile with Apple, and I think it's fair to say the remainder of the industry was slightly caught off guard and is playing catch-up. But given the product announcements from the silicon vendors, 2015 looks like the year that 64-bit arrives in force in the Android ecosystem. So, and how do you expect this to play out in China?
So I think if you look at the China market, all our silicon partners will be moving to BSA 64-bit very quickly. And I think fundamentally, if you look at $75 plus handsets in 2015, it's very much about a very rapid transition from 32-bit V7A to 64-bit BSA in the China market. To really sort of have these two sort of momentum effects in the China market, this combination of a rapid rollout of LTE combined with a rapid rollout of ARM V8A with the 64-bit support.
And if it's a fair question, does ARM have any expectation around the sort of penetration rates that you might see in of 64-bit in mobile perhaps by the end of next year?
So I think if you look at the overall market, worldwide market, I think by the end of the year, you know, through the total year, the number of 64-bit shipments will be, or V8A shipments, will probably be around about 50% of the total smartphone shipments by the end of 2015.
So just for clarity, is that an exit run rate or is that a sort of average for the year?
That's the average for the year.
Okay, that's quite a rapid uptake. Mm. And what might that be dependent on? I mean, are there you know, particular manufacturing nodes that your Chinese partners are targeting the V8A, or you know, is the V8A dependent rollout, is that dependent on a particular node coming on stream, for example?
Absolutely not. And I think the great thing about our ARM V8A 64-bit offerings is the fact that, for example, things like the Cortex-A53 can be implemented in 28 nanometer, which is the sort of default node choice being used today. And this means that it's very easy for a customer that is perhaps using Cortex-A7 today to move very quickly to Cortex-A53 and use that in their smartphone SoCs. So I think really the only thing that you're seeing is just that people just have the simple, you know, the standard getting into production process, you know, doing final qual of their SoCs, doing final qual of the hand tests, the software, and I think as we go into Q1, Q2 next year, you're going to see numerous announcements around ARM V8A smartphones and SoCs being launched.
And without going, I know ARM is sensitive about talking about royalty rates, but just generally speaking, common sense would dictate that you would expect to be able to achieve a higher royalty rate for a version 8 chip than a version 7. But, I mean, are there other considerations other than just the fact that it's the next generation technology in terms of what you might get for the royalty rate?
So absolutely, you're right. As we move along the technology, the royalty rates do increase. And certainly with our China customers, when they're looking at new SoCs, using new CPUs, they're also looking at using, you know, latest generation Mali technology such as the T7 series or the T8 series. So that does provide potential opportunities as well.
And multi-core and big little or two, they're there?
Yes, that's a very good point. So very much, as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing that the sort of $300 plus price point very strong trend towards big-little technology. So using a combination of Cortex-A57s and Cortex-A53s. And for example, what you're seeing is people looking at different core counts, so perhaps 6 cores rather than 8 cores in the big-little configurations. And then very much at that sort of $100 to $150 price point, people looking at octa-core configurations using Cortex-A53.
And perhaps just one final question came in on the call, but are you seeing any differences in China in terms of features, product features, that Chinese customers are demanding? Anything particular there within China?
So I think there's two interesting aspects. Certainly from the software ecosystem, the apps that are actually running on the smartphones, those are very different from the typical apps that you see, for example, on your Android smartphone today in the Western world. I think the second aspect is because this is a very rapid market with a very short time to market, we're seeing that OEMs are actually willing to take a lot more risks on the design of a handset, try different things, looking at how they can have an edge against the competition. And I think that trend is very much going to continue. And I think at some point you could actually see some of those, should we say, mechanical design aspects or new features actually then come out into the developed world.
Great. Well, thank you. I think I'm more or less out of questions. I don't know, Phil, if you had any remarks to make.
No, that's fantastic. Thanks very much, James. Thanks very much, Andrew. And thank you, everyone, for dialing in today and listening to the call. As I mentioned earlier, James has prepared a presentation on this topic, which you can view at ir.arm.com. And just in terms of forthcoming events on the IR calendar, we are hosting an investor breakfast at CES on January the 7th. And the event after that will be our full year results, on which the date is February the 11th. So please see our website for more details. And on that, I look forward to speaking to you in the next year, and in the meantime, enjoy the holidays. Thank you very much.